I'd like to start off the sessions this afternoon with dual mode C-Fi D-Fi use in VR display IC. This will be a dual presentation by Ahmed Ella, Director of Engineering at Mixcell, and Jeffrey Lucanes of Synaptics, Senior Director for IoT Video Products. Mr. Ella is Director of Engineering at Mixcell and manages teams working on serial link products such as HDMI, USB, and multi-standard SerDes. Jeffrey Lucanes is Senior Director for IoT Video Products with Synaptics for more than 6 years. Jeffrey manages discrete touch and video interface product lines. Please welcome Mr. Ella and Mr. Lucanes to the stage.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. In our talk today, we're going to have two halves. The first half, I'll go over a GPU to a Pixel VR system, and then Ella will come out and talk about the Mixcell C-Fi D-Fi transmitter that they've developed. So on to the display system. So here's a quick overview of a VR solution, and just to orientate everybody. So on the input side of most discrete or most graphics sources, whether it be a desktop, a laptop, or even a cell phone, usually outputs DisplayPort video over a USB-C connector. And just as a point, if you visit the demo booth, the Mixcell booth, there's a demo where there's a newer cell phone that's actually driving 2160 by 2160 displays off of a cell phone. So you don't need a laptop or a desktop to drive these types of resolutions anymore. The function of the bridge chip is to take DisplayPort data and convert it to MIPI and also provide configuration and control for the overall system. The dual MIPI inputs are transferred into a display driver chip that's mounted on the display. It's also known as a DDIC. And in this case, it is an LCD driver chip that does drive the panels. And so, yeah, this is the overall system. Okay, so VR, it's advancing a lot of different aspects as VR evolves to next generation. The first generation products, I believe, had 1K by 1K displays, and as you look through them, if you put the display generally about 1 inch away from your eye, you were able to see spaces between the pixels, and it made it appear like you're looking through a screen door because of the spacing of the pixels. And so the next generation of VR really needs to address this by supporting higher resolutions. And so the target is roughly 1,000 pixel per inch is what's a target that most are looking to achieve. So that translates into about 2K by 2K as a minimum display resolution. 3K by 3K is better, and optimum would be 4K by 4K. In addition to the resolution, the other aspect that needs to be addressed for the next generation of VR is the responsiveness. As you look at displays that are a couple feet away or even 10 inches away with a cell phone, if you're looking at a display that's 1 inch away from your eye, you can see more things and different things than you would normally for a different type display. And so for crisp LCD images in the near field of view, you need to, the LCD crystals really need to be stabilized when you start viewing them. So what the panel manufacturers would like to try to do is load the pixels in and give them time to settle and then flash the backlight. So whenever you view any pixels, they are completely stable and there's no transitioning, so you don't see any blur. And to accomplish this additional time, we need to update the panel faster than normally would, which means we need more DisplayPort bandwidth and more MIPI bandwidth to get the pixels there sooner. So how do we achieve that with available technologies that are there today? And so first off is, the DisplayPort, it has 32 gigabits per second, and so many of the, desktops, laptops, and even cell phones are getting to the point where they can achieve that kind of video output on the USB-C connectors. If you need more than that, how do we get higher than that to achieve, to support the higher resolutions? Well, beyond straight video, then we can start turning on DSC compression on DisplayPort, so that'll give us a higher level of bandwidth. Even higher than that would be enabled DSC over the MIPI link, so that achieves even higher resolutions. And then some applications can use sub-pixel rendered video that comes from the GPU all the way to the display, and that would achieve even higher levels of performance. And lastly, there's something that we've created at Synaptics called Foveal Transport, and allows full resolution foveal images to be transferred to the display at using half the display port or MIPI bandwidth. So I'll talk a little bit about that in a couple slides. Okay, a little bit of an overview on the chipset that we've developed on the bridge chip. It's DisplayPort 1.4, supports all the optional features. It supports both DSC and FEC for compression. It is optimized for very low latency. This is to reduce the seasick effect that you get when either there's a lag in the video or the video and audio are out of sync. And so having as low latency as possible is one of the things that can be done to minimize that. This chipset supports single stream mode or multi-stream mode. Single stream is typically used by PCs that can support higher pixel clock rates. Multi-stream is generally more favorable to a cell phone type application which can't always run as high a pixel clock. So the chipset can support either one. We do support DSC compression and Synaptics proprietary own compression algorithm that was developed for cell phones. And then we also include the combo DeFi-CeFi, which is our partners at Mixel developed, and we use it in our product. So it's very nice. It supports 2.5 gigabits per second on DeFi and 2.5 gigasymbols per second on CeFi. The DDIC chip complements the bridge chip. It also has a combo DeFi-CeFi. It supports both types of video decoders. And it can support up to 4K by 3K resolution displays. There are several extra features that were designed into the display driver chip just for VR. And one of them is it has a foveal transport image overlay. So I'll explain that a little bit in a couple slides, but it does have hardware in there to be able to support foveal transport. It also has a FIFO to adjust panel timing to adjust the load time versus the scan time. And so it uses the FIFO to do that. That eliminates the need to do any buffering of the video in the bridge chip. Again, we wanted to minimize the latency there. Lastly, it supports pixel overdrive. Again, we want to make sure the pixels are all stable whenever the backlight turns on for a near-eye application, and also has a version of local dimming. At this point, would like to thank both MIPI and Visa for supporting the same DSC compression spec. If there wasn't the same spec, we would have had to implement a decoder and an encoder in the bridge chip, which takes gates, adds power, adds latency and cost, and so we wouldn't have wanted to do that. So it was really convenient for us that both Visa and MIPI use the same DSC as we bridge video across those links. So some of the functionality of a bridge chip: it does configure the GPU by providing the capabilities of the display subsystem to the GPU. So things like what kind of video format, whether it's 4:20, 4:44, 8 or 10-bit pixel, what type of compression it supports. But also the bridge chip defines to the GPU what sort of panel and frame timing it needs to support to allow the pixel to have a settling time and backlight flashing. And similarly, the bridge chip configures the DDIC. Again, it formats what kind of video it's going to be receiving after it gets the information from the GPU, what type of compression, and configures the panel to have specific scan time, settle time, and backlight flash time. And the bridge chip also updates the pixel overdrive, local dimming, and there's a FIFO that can be adjusted for bandwidth adjusted for timing. All right, so I mentioned this idea of foveal transport. It's really based on the concept of foveal rendering. Foveal rendering came about from when gaming applications started using eye tracking. And so if you know where the eye is looking, you can focus on just rendering an image in that 3-degree field of view that your mind really processes that data inside that three-degree field of view only. And so the GPUs would start rendering a foveal image and then a background image, which much less resolution. And when they did that, you can improve the, it decreases the rendering time and increases the frame rate. And unfortunately, what they did, well, they had no choice, is they combined the two images together, a high-resolution foveal image with a lower-resolution background image, put the two together, but they ship it out at the full resolution. So unfortunately, the rest of the system cannot take advantage of the savings that are achieved. So what we've done at foveal transport is we've asked the GPU, the graphics application, to keep the images separate and send them as a concatenated image to the display driver chip. The gaze point, where your eye is looking, is embedded in display data, so the display driver chip will know how to center the foveal image in front of the background image. And then the DDIC will also scale the full frame image and over as part of the overlay. One of the side benefits is chromatic aberration and lens distortion can now be processed in the where the eye is looking on the foveal image, not on the full frame. And I've been told that increases the accuracy of it if you use it actually where the eye is positioned as opposed to looking just generically doing it across the full frame. So a foveal transport ends up using half the data and one half the bandwidth. Okay, so I want to talk briefly then about C-Fi, D-Fi. We did bring up on our first system, the team, while we wanted to do C-Fi, there's not a lot of ecosystem out there to support C-Fi. So both the panel manufacturers and our team internally, really we wanted to bring up D-Fi first because there's an ecosystem you can bring the panel up much faster as far as complexity test equipment and characterization equipment. So we, at least for our product, we brought it up first with D-Fi. Then after that, we brought it up in C-Fi, and it was much easier because we had proved out many of the aspects. So having a combo C-Fi, D-Fi really helped us do the product bring up much faster than we probably normally would have for doing the first time bring up of C-Fi. So I want to walk through example to compare C-Fi, D-Fi in different configurations. So here's a table, and it's based on an example that's 2880 by 1900. This is a per eye example, one per each eye, obviously. So in the first case, no compression. And so this will fit into four lanes of HBR3 of DisplayPort, which consumes about 32 of the 32.4 gigabits of data that's available. So pretty much uses all the available bandwidth. But in this case, the DeFi cannot support that bandwidth, so for an uncompressed case, DeFi is not an option. We have to use six CeFi trios to be able to support the bandwidth to each of the displays. Now looking at some other combinations, what if we did turn on compression between the bridge and the display? In that case, the eight-lane DeFi now could be used, and also the CeFi drops from six trios down to four trios. If we extend that and turn on 2-to-1 compression from the GPU to the display, which is probably the optimum way of doing it, now the GPU can output a four-lane HBR2. And for those who aren't familiar with HBR2, that's roughly the data rate that each of our laptops and our cell phones are generating data at that rate. But it does require compression. Then extending that further to 3-to-1 compression, now this gets kind of an interesting case. So with 3-to-1, it can be used two lanes of HBR3, and so now the video out of the GPU can use a standard USB-C cable. A custom cable and a custom connector are no longer required to support high-resolution VR, with 2880 by 1900. So it fits in a normal USB-C cable without any custom. Then lastly, just comparing foveal transport, it looks very similar to the 2-to-1 case, except there's no compression. It's a full resolution image, and it also supports two-lane HBR3 out of the GPU. And so there's one line missing from this slide. Because of the schedule, I didn't have time to our team to fill out the power. But there are considerable power benefits as you move left to right across this, and I'll be updating that and check back with me in a month, and I think we'll have the data updated to show the power benefits of the lane reduction. Okay, so with that, I'd like to turn it over to Ella to talk about the very nice combo C-Fi-D-Fi he developed for us. Sir?
Thanks, Jeff, for for the interesting insights about the VR. So I'd like to start talking about the VR. As you might know, that it uses immersive devices. So the head-mounted display, the HMDs used for VR are immersive. That means that they isolate the real-world environment from your environment you're seeing while wearing the headset. On the other side, there are other reality technologies such as augmented reality, AR, and mixed reality, MR, which are actually different than VR, that the device you're wearing is like semi-transparent. It's as if you're wearing a weak pair of sunglasses. And in AR and MR, you're actually interacting with the real world environment, and virtual objects are added to your environment. So if you have, if you're wearing an AR headset and you have, like, you know, a virtual object, a pet, for example, walking through this room, then it would recognize all these tables, it would pass through it. It actually identifies or understands the real world environment, and based on it, that's the way the AR, or that's the major difference between AR and MR versus VR. So in order for an AR or MR system to identify or understand the surrounding environment, it needs actually some sensors. So there's environment sensors built into your HMD. There are video capture sensors. There are depth capture, so it can understand the real world environment and interact efficiently with it. So you can kind of exercise a real reality experience. So, yeah. So based on our experience with our customers in the XR domain, we kind of created this block diagram. It's like a system diagram to highlight some of the use cases in the XR domain. So the reason we did that is to kind of highlight that in XR, there are more interfaces with respect to MIPI other than or beyond the DSI. So in VR, the main interface is the DSI. In AR and MR, you also have CSI interfaces. And we can actually map it on this system diagram. So this is like an interface you would find typically in an AR system. So you have multiple environment sensors capturing the environment around you, surrounding you. You have a video capture sensor. You have a depth capture sensor. And all of these typically would be using CSI, transmitting CSI data over DeFi or CFI to the other side. The other side of the link is typically either a capture processor. It might be the application processor. It can be a bridge chip. It all depends on the XR system you're building. So if you have a bridge chip, for example, which can be used to aggregate the different CSI data coming in, then you need another pair of CSI transmitter receiver to send the data to the application processor. Same case with the capture processor. It depends, like if you're using a tethered VR, for example, or a tethered AR system, you'll need to transfer this data to a PC where all the processing is happening. On the other side, if we're talking about display, as Jeff just talked, you'd probably need a bridge chip to convert the data coming from your processor in a tethered VR application. You'd need a bridge chip to convert the display port data into DSI, and then, of course, you'd need, whether you have your application processor or the bridge chip, you need to transfer the data to the DDIC through DSI, which is also using DeFi or CeFi. In the DDIC, you also have a DSI receiver, which is receiving data over DeFi and CeFi. So just to highlight this point again, this is not like all the MIPI interface used in XR. This is just kind of our experience through our customers with multiple use cases. And the reason or the point is to highlight that there's a lot of potential applications for the MIPI specs in the XR system. So by the way, we refer to XR, it's like a superset of VR, AR, and MR. So with the XR system challenges, we see multiple challenges in the XR systems. Obviously, bandwidth is the first challenge. So we need higher bandwidth for display. You need higher resolution. You also need faster frame rates. For the sensors, you also need high resolution and high dynamic range. On the other side, on the chip side, there's more challenges or more points to consider. First point, and the most important, is the power. So for head-mounted display, for VR and AR applications, thermal efficiency is very important. Of course, you cannot be wearing a headset which is dissipating high power and it's kind of getting warm because that would be very annoying to you. So power is very important. Of course, being portable device, you also care about the power. The other point is the pin count. So that's also a challenge, which is usually a very important resource in chip design. And minimizing die area is a third point. Luckily, the MIPI spec attributes match the biggest challenges we can notice in the XR. So specifically, all the new standards are addressing the high bandwidth requirements. So the next generation DSI, CSI, DeFi, CeFi, all of them are addressing the high bandwidth. And of course, by definition, MIPI is optimized for low power. So that's a very important attribute, which actually highlights why MIPI has a lot of potential or a lot of use cases in such application, the XR domain. So digging deeper into our Mixel's CeFi DeFi integrated in the VXR 7200. So this is a dual mode PHY. It's it operates at like in DeFi mode, DeFi 1.2. It supports CeFi 1.1. In the DeFi mode, it operates the maximums like four lanes, which uses 10-pin configuration. In the CeFi mode, it's a three-lane. It operates as a three-lane mode, which uses 9-pin configuration. This IP is like highly configurable. It supports lane swapping and pin swapping, which is a very good feature, helping in system integration and board and package design. So basically, you can swap the pins in any order you want. It supports DSQ in the DeFi mode, like for the 2.5 gig operation. And it supports both T1 and T2 in the CeFi mode to give you maximum flexibility based on your use case. And of course, it's very important to have a BIST with 100% coverage for the hard macro, which is, of course, crucial for production. So next, I go for a kind of a very brief comparison between CeFi and DeFi. This is just to highlight some points which are relevant to this topic. So of course, adoption, everyone knows that the DeFi is the de facto. Very long history of adoption, while CeFi is accelerating, and part of this acceleration is actually by coexisting on DeFi in the same, like in a combo PHY. The next point I'd like to highlight is the power. So with the DeFi 1.2, there's excellent power efficiency due to the 2.5 gigabit per second. That's, of course, a very good improvement compared to the earlier DeFi. However, with the CFI, especially at the highest data rates, we see even further power efficiency. So if your application is like sensitive to power, then this would be an extra point to consider. Maximum bandwidth is the third point I'd like to highlight. and for this particular IP, it's like four lanes in DeFi mode, so operating at the maximum bandwidth would be 10 gigabit per second for the DeFi mode. For the CFI mode, also at 2.5 gigahertz clock, with the three lanes, you get maximum bandwidth of 17 gigabit per second. The next point is the minimum number of pins. So with DeFi, the minimum lane configuration is like one lane, so hence you need at least four pins. We're talking about the serial interface pins, of course, which are an important resource on the chip. For the CFI mode, it's only three pins, is like one lane is the minimum configuration you can support. The last point we'd like to highlight here is the flexibility. So for DeFi, all the lanes need to operate together in a PHY. While in CFI, you can have a PHY like with multiple lanes, and they are not correlated together. Each of them can operate separately. So that's one additional flexibility we'd like to highlight here. So the advantage of the Mixel dual mode PHY, the DeFi CFI DeFi combo, the first advantage we'd like to point out is that we're sharing the serial interface pins, the chip pins, the package pins, which of course is very important for chip and package design. The next point we would like to highlight is that we are reusing all the DeFi blocks in CFI mode. So there's no redundancy. All the DeFi blocks used are used in CFI. We're adding a couple of extra blocks to support CFI, but everything which was developed for DeFi was reused by the CFI. So we can say that the combo PHY, it provides the flexibility. At the same time, you're minimizing the area overhead. There's no additional cost for pin count. So, you know, optimizing your or enhancing your PPA. Getting back to our system diagram we started with, we'd like to, talk about some system considerations while you're doing your XR system. So you need to worry about your application, of course, the total resolution requirement, which boils down to the number of ports you need and the number of lanes per port and the rate per port. So like trying to connect the dots with the points we just mentioned earlier, we could say that the having a CDFI combo provides you flexibility to support multiple modes and multiple use cases, which would be a benefit in such a system. So going next to the characterization results, actually this is the bench setup from the Synaptics lab. So the scope used, the RTB, the evaluation board. We see next the CFI eye diagrams. So on the left here is the 1.5 gigasymbol per second eye diagram, while on the right is the 2.5 gigasymbol per second eye diagram. The eye diagrams on the bottom are all the three differential eyes on top of each other with the maximum channel supported in that rate. We then take a look on the DeFi eye diagrams. Again, on the left is the 1.5 gig eye diagram, gigabit per second. On the left is the 2.5 gigabit per second eye diagram. Of course, this is with the real product package, channel, board. So heading towards the summary, we could highlight that Mixel's IP solution in the XR domain, we do have multiple IPs there. Like so we have CiFi, DeFi combo. We have the DeFi 1.2. We have DeFi 1.1, CSI, DSI, DSI2. All of them are actually implemented with our customers in the XR domain. So we'd like to summarize a few points. First point is that the combo CiFi DeFi offers a flexible and versatile solution for both system bring up and application usage. The next point is that the Mixel CiFi DeFi link speed, the 2.5 gigabit per second, symbol per second, makes it ideal for most display applications. For this generation of display and even for the next generation, our combo IP has been integrated into many end products, some of them in the XR domain by tier one SoC in both display and sensor. And as I said, several of them are in XR domain. The next point I'd like to highlight is that the Mixel CiFi DeFi is available in multiple configurations, so like TX, RX, Universal, DSI, CSI, and it's silicon proven in multiple nodes and foundries. And at last, we'd like to highlight that Synaptix has achieved first silicon success integrating Mixel's CiFi DeFi into the VXR 7200. So with that, I conclude, and I don't know if you have time for questions.
No, we're running a little bit behind, so both Ahmed and Jeff will be available for questions at the back of the room, or can step outside if you have questions for them. But we are running a little bit behind. So give a big round of applause for Jeff and Ahmed.